in business or in life or whatever, there are two people you need to try to impress or make proud. The 8-year-old you and the 80-year-old you.
We've got an incredible new partner, PrintProfit.com. You may have heard of PrintProfit. We had Nick on, the founder, before, and he's coming up again. But PrintProfit.com, you already print shirts. Now it's time to print profit. PrintProfit is a profitable software built for print shops, profitability software for print shops. You can think of it like a business co-pilot that connects to your Printavo and QuickBooks to show you in real time exactly where you stand and where to go next. Run your shop with confidence, knowing exactly where to focus on to close better deals, increase margins, and grow profitably every day. You can schedule a one-on-one print profit audit at printprofit.com. I just want to also say that this platform is really, really powerful. I've heard a lot of positive feedback from shops who are using it at printprofit.com to be able to see the profitability of their business in real time and not wait to the end of the month to see what cash is left over in the bank. Check it out, printprofit.com.
Sweet. And I think we're going to have Nick on shortly in a future episode. Bruce, have you heard of Multicraft underscore daddy? Of course you have. If you go to Instagram right now, search Multicraft underscore daddy, you will find Dave Eggers from Multicraft. If you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies for over 50 years have been providing you with top brands at competitive prices. If you mention the Printavo pod, you'll receive an extra 10% off your order. And Dave gives away a free case of PMI tape on every episode. If you haven't ordered from Dave yet, shoot him a message, Multicraft underscore daddy. He raffles it off every single week, and we're so appreciative for his sponsorship, and his videos are pretty funny. Keep doing them, Dave. All right, who we got next?
Easy Way. Steven, I know you're spending hours cleaning screens. Guess what? That's a thing of the past, because Easy Way screen printing and screen cleaning chemicals get the job done. They've got innovative formulas that are designed to work quickly and effectively, so you can spend less time cleaning and more time creating. Ding! I need that little like gum commercial sparkle from the teeth. Plus, Easy Way is passionate about empowering printers of all skill levels. They offer helpful resources and expert advice to help you succeed in printing. GraphxSource.com. You know that if you mention Printavo Pod 2.4, that gets you 50% off their services. And what are their services? Separations, mockups, creative art, order management, digitizing, back office admin, customer service. They've been at it for 40 plus years in the game, and they plug into Printavo. They plug into any shop management tool that you have to be able to help manage this, all that stuff. I know Campus Ink heavily uses them for a lot of the seps and digitizing and mockups. And so they've got a bunch of artists that are plugging and playing into Campus Ink's Printavo account. So check them out, graphxsource.com. All right, let's jump into the episode.
Can you start us off with a redemption joke?
Oh, you're saying my other joke wasn't good? Is that what that you're implying?
That's what you said.
That
I said you missed the punchline, and then I thought that was the punchline, and then it went off the rails from there.
I'm pretty sure I did start the joke off saying it wasn't very good. So I did set it like the whole scene, but instead of a joke, I have a story. Maybe I don't have a joke today, but I do have a story.
Start us off with a story.
Okay. Well, I purchased some chips from Trader Joe's and I got them home and opened the bag and they were destroyed, just like a bunch of crumbs. Right. And normally, you know, for a few dollars, you're not going to hassle with taking them back and trying to get a refund or whatever. You just throw them away.
How destroyed are we talking?
I mean, they were bad, you know, like just, like just crumbs,
powder. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically a little better than powder, but you know, so I said, you know, hey, go to Trader Joe's enough that I'll just put a chip clip on it. And next time I'm in there, I'll let them know, because they're, you know, I think they'd return them and give me a credit or something. And so I went in a few days later. I went up to the counter, to the customer service counter, and I said, hey, these chips are basically powder. They're dust. And the guy said, oh, okay, well, let's get you a refund. And he filled out this yellow card. He handed it to me. He said, when you go up to the register, they'll credit your whatever, the order you're about to get. And you know what he said after that? We will do better next time. And I loved that. And so I told that story in our production meeting like a week or two ago, and already people are using it. I have a chat between the production manager and our ops manager and me every day. There's like a Kong report, and it talks about what some of the wins and losses of the day and things that kind of where we stand, let's say a status update. And so the other day we missed a deadline for the first time in like weeks. And he said, but you know, we called the customer and they're cool with it, but I will do better next time. And I thought that was cool. You know, like we all want to do better, don't we? And so anyway, I like that Trader Joe said that, and I want to use that when I crush chips accidentally.
I think what's great about it is it's not an excuse. It's just a acknowledgement. And sometimes that's just better than, you know, if you have an unruly customer or something goes wrong, it's just like, hey, we'll do better. And that's all you can ask.
What was that quote that you always bring up, Stephen, from the ThreatX conference years ago about conflict or resolution? I can't remember the exact phrasing.
Jay Baer, loyalty is built in resolution.
Yeah, I think that's the context of the broken chips too.
That's why we keep buying from Amazon, because they fix everything they do wrong really fast.
True. And I think that's marketing, isn't it? And so I don't know what your marketing budget is, but I guess the rule of thumb, isn't it something like 3% or something like that of your total revenue? And, you know, we don't spend money on marketing, really. We don't do billboards. We don't do radio. We don't do any of that stuff anymore. And so what I do is take my marketing, that 3%, or I don't even know if it's exactly 3%, but whenever something goes wrong, we just go all in on fixing that thing, because that's marketing essentially, because you're making something that went wrong right. And sometimes even in a, like, you maybe just do even extra if you can. Do you know what I mean?
There's that book, the Zapier founder we talked about before. Yeah. And he talked about customer service. Yeah. Delivering happiness. Really great read. Very short. He talked about categorizing your customer service team as your marketing team's budget. And so instead of a reactive spend and something that you're trying to, you know, maybe weasel down over time or make more efficient, if it's an extension of your brand, like if it's an extension of how people feel about when they deal with your company, maybe you have prospects coming through that way, right? Through getting quotes and like, okay, they want a really positive experience right out of the gate. If you treat it like that, it's a different mindset for the team and for the managers on it.
You know, a company that does this really well in our industry is Supacolor. I feel like Rum has always been like, we're just going to fix it and make it right as fast as possible. And that inspired us. So in our business, half of it is print on demand and custom cut and sew jerseys. And, you know, most print on demand companies don't do returns or exchanges. We decided to actually do it, and we use a tool called AfterShip, and it tracks them. And so our return and exchange rate is about 0.5%, or it's usually below 1%, and it tells us like what we spend on it. And we've just instructed, you know, our customer service rep is just delight them, just delight them, just delight them. And it sucks, but it gets them coming back. And I think that's the most important part in resolution is, you know, you're going to go back to Trader Joe's and you're still going to buy chips.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Although it. I didn't that time. I didn't get the chips.
Oh, he went to Target and said no.
I did go back to Trader Joe's, but no chips. I think that was the world or the universe saying, Andy, you really don't need chips.
You don't need to put the chips down. That's fair. So Andy, we brought you on last week. This is part two.
Wait, can I ask one question about something before and then jump into this? You said you don't spend money on marketing like you used to. Did you used to do the billboards and the other stuff before?
I did this thing called Yellow Pages even, you know, so like when we first opened, they still had Yellow Pages. They would, you know, so a salesman person would come to the front and they would say, what kind of display ad in the Yellow Pages do you want this year? You know, and there was, I think we could be under three categories, something like t-shirts, screen printing, or sporting goods. And we did all three, you know, and so you paid for Yellow Pages ads. And so, you know, we did that. What else? I used to spend money on, I had a marketing team, I guess, you know, there was a few people because when Google was so popular, we wanted to be in the first, we wanted to be number one. When you Googled any of those things, you know, we wanted to be the very first thing in that Google, the six pack that showed up. And so how do you get there? Well, SEO, and we went all in on different ways to be number one, and that whether it was YouTube or, you know, like having videos, having a Facebook page, having registering your address, your name and address with, you know, every single thing that you can. And I paid like $500 every year to register it and have it correct, have somebody do that for us, you know? And so that's what I spent money on, not billboards, no, not radio ads and things like that.
So like just, the directories and SEO.
Yeah.
I feel like shops don't budget for marketing or intentionally spend on it. And it's so different than like other industries, right? Like construction companies and other local businesses. But like, I feel like that's a common theme. Like, yeah, they might have some SEO, but like aggressively marketing. I don't know, Bruce, why do you think that is?
Well, I don't think we even budgeted stuff until maybe we were a couple million dollars in revenue. Like as in it was just a, oh shoot, do we need this or not? Can we afford it or not? It wasn't like marketing gets X percent or X dollars a year to spend.
But is it because it's hard to track the ROI?
I think it's because there was nobody financially driven. It was, do we need like a person? Like, what do we need? Do we have the money to spend that regardless of the department? And will it have a positive, like you said, the positive ROI part? Instead of like, are you talking about as in, hey, look, there's $10,000 this year for marketing that we've earmarked. We need to be able to deploy that and have some sort of good ROI on that. Or are you talking about just spending on marketing at all?
I think a little of both. Well, I doubt people are really budgeting for it, but are they intentionally spending on it or just kind of like, yeah, we'll do a little bit of this and that?
I think as small business owners, we're kind of winging it, you know, and we're coming from backgrounds that necessarily aren't marketing, and we're doing our best while we're also trying to put out, you know, 100 other fires. But I will tell you this much. I just got back from the Apparel Decorating Summit in Nashville, and it was great. It was very intense. I was exhausted afterwards, because there's just like I think I had to get up at like 5:30 in the morning, you know, to get started, which I'm not used to. And then I went to like 6 at night, you know, just they had every minute booked out. But what I was going to say is that on the last keynote was Kevin Baumgart, and it was from Sales Inc. And, you know, if you're trying to grow your business, and sales, if you're trying to grow sales, you know, revenue, he has 12 steps that he outlined in this keynote, and they were amazing. Like, I wish I had that at when I hit go, you know, when I hit start on my business, because that would have made all the difference. I mean, I could have accelerated growth. I was sort of just trying, you know, my best and sort of playing the long game with referrals, which works. It doesn't, you know, it's great when you do a good job and then, you know, somebody says, oh, you know, you should go to SureKong or call Andy or whatever that is. But that takes time to build that momentum. But Kevin, it's legit. I've never heard it before. It was pretty cool.
If anyone wants that presentation, email us and we'll get Kevin to send it to you, because he's supposed to send it to me. Yeah.
I have it too.
You have it. Okay. Email us, Steven at campus.inc, and we'll get you a copy of it. Cause I heard that from a couple other people too.
Yeah, I have it. There was a QR code, so I have it. So you can email Andy at SureKong, and it's only $99 this week. And I'll get it for you. No problem.
Okay, so Andy's back for part two.
And congrats by the way on joining your Fabric group. I know it's kicking off in a month or so, so that's gonna be pretty exciting. I know Steven's got an exciting group, 9 or so folks.
It's gonna be tight.
We already chatted with the coach, EOS certified coach. He's really, really good.
Andy, 8 of us all reporting to someone out of the industry once a month.
You ready for that?
I am. Do you think what percent of the time will be business and what percent will be like just bullshitting? Do you think we can keep it serious?
I've told him that you need to wrangle this group.
It is the Toon Squad. It is a really tight group. I think what's cool is all of us are friends. We talk, we help each other out. We occasionally get on Zoom calls, maybe once a year or something. And, you know, to all be together and be held accountable to something or someone. But I think to your point, Andy, like, yeah, there's going to be some bullshitting. It might be business. It could also be life focused, right? Of like, you know, for me, all of you guys have run businesses a lot longer than me and have experienced a lot more life. And so like, as you guys have designed your businesses to complement your life, that's actually what I'm slightly, you know, more excited about than maybe just some of the tactical business stuff. So it'll be interesting. And the meetings are like once a month or 2 hours long. I bet you will go over, but I'm pumped. I think we're kicking off in July.
We've got, by the way, for folks listening, there's two more group slots open. So fabric.inc and you can apply. I mean, it's honestly been really helpful. There's a group that I saw from the coach's phone, their text thread of them just constantly motivating each other. Like one guy didn't hit his outbound sales goal for the month because his annual goal is a revenue goal. And they called him like 2 days before. He went out, knocked on doors, and he actually got a deal. And like, it was really, really cool. He shared it in the Slack. And, you know, as an owner, we get so isolated. So this has been helpful. So anyway, I'm excited for you guys to go through it, the experience. So are you not going to do your joke then?
You mean do the joke? I thought the joke is you kept it in, right? It wasn't cut.
Oh, okay. I honestly...
I don't even know either. I told the story. Yeah, I told the story. You know,
at first I thought the chip story was going to be a joke. And then I was like, no, this is the real life.
No joke.
The chips were crushed. Steven, kick us off with the first part. So yeah, if you didn't see part one, watch part one. We are just talking. We've got about, I don't know, 10 questions that we've written that we wanted to ask Andy and dive deep into.
Wait, I have a joke. Why did the screen printer get kicked out of the party? They didn't make a good first impression.
Dude, stop. Was that AI? Is this AI Farag?
It may have been AI Farag. That was a pretty awesome. Good one. That was that a pretty good one. Sorry, Andy, I stole your thunder.
That's okay. Do I look really pale? Do I need to get some color in here somehow?
I think you look... We could put a sepia, like... we could go black and white.
Andy, have you thought about... Since you've been running Shirt Kong for some time, you know, gone through the growth cycles... You talked about last time finding a better sweet spot for the business and for your time spent. Have you thought ever about legacy? Does that matter to you?
No, Bruce. Let's see. Yeah, I think it does a bit, or maybe it used to more, you know, so Shirt Kong is its own entity now. And I think that sort of ties in almost to, a question you had later about identity. Do you know, like what, how do I identify with, as far as like the shop goes, but you know, is it, you know, if I walk away and sell it, let's say if there's an exit, then it continues on. And that's pretty cool. Right. Because I think the most important thing would be just for the team who's here now that want to stay and that aren't aging out and that do like their jobs that they have, they still have it, you know? And so maybe that's what's most important as far as legacy goes. Is that, you know, an employee's 20-something people and that means a lot to them, you know? And so, I mean, I've thought about that and it should exist after me.
You don't want your face on the wall like a big Italian restaurant? Like, you know, like, that's our founder.
The barbershop I go to has that. It's like the grandfather's, like, portrait is still on the wall.
You want to be able to watch, if you were to exit your business, you want to be able to watch it thrive and be proud of it?
I don't think so. I mean, it would be nice to be for it to exist and yes, successfully exist after me. But I think that once I'm done, then that's it, you know. And then what happens? I don't know. I can't. I think I have to let it go. I mean, I'm not looking for generational, you know, a generational business that I passed down to someone that they didn't build, because I think that that's very difficult to do. You know, when you bring in a son or a daughter and you expect them to have the same passion as you, and, you know, because they weren't there from the beginning, and then what are they going to bring in their son and daughter? So it's like grandchild. And then I don't know, I think that it's possible and it happens, but it's not anything that I'm looking towards. No. How about you?
It's a great question. I had never thought about it with Printavo. I think having time to actually process, spending so much time on Printavo now with new ownership and everything, that I didn't care about it. My thought was, when you're dead, you're dead. It doesn't really matter. But a part of me does think about that with Fabric a bit, and not as in a kids thing. It's more of like a, well, this could have like a lasting impression, and I kind of appreciate that. Like, I think, you know, some of the stories I've heard from shops moving off, you know, carbon copy paper and onto just something digital, to so that the owner could be checking in on things on vacation, it was like, that is pretty lasting. But you're right. I think the legacy aspect is maybe easy to get wrapped up in, that I personally also don't care about. But you mentioned identity, which is a great piece of this, is like, if you feel like your business is your identity and vice versa. And I do think that that is a bit of a dual-edged sword here with it, in the good and the bad. So I think the good is that, like, it you know, you have to be the identity for a long time. That's how you are able to have an edge. That's how you can make sales. People want to deal with the CEO or the founder, or, you know, or some executive. They want to feel special when doing that. But then I think over time, you know, separating those two is probably necessary in having like a more of a calm business, a calmer business that doesn't drive you forward all the time. I feel like, Stephen, you had this transition for the last couple of years of trying to have, like, it's Stephen at Campus Inc. versus now it's Campus Inc. and there's a lot more people there. Like, can you talk a little bit about having it together versus maybe feeling a little bit more separate, and the pros and cons of that?
A lot of therapy. So I don't know. I want to say pre-COVID, BC, B-COVID. I feel like I was running around with my head cut off, and everyone knew me as Stephen at Campus Inc., even my family, my friends. And when I, you know, talk to people outside of the business, that's the first thing they would ask about. And that's, you know, that kind of defined me. In that process, I feel like I lost who, like, I sort of was, if that makes sense. I'm like, wait, I'm Stephen and I work at Campus Inc. I happen to own it, but it does not define me. And it's not, you know, like, it's not your gravestone, if that makes sense. And I had to spend a lot of time creating space and balance and putting people in place and letting go so that I could kind of reclaim my identity. And that's through, you know, like, not being at the shop as much as I used to be, or not, you know, traveling down Monday through Friday in Champaign, or finding hobbies and interests. And, you know, it was even at one point where I was like, just trade shows, like going to all the trade shows, like all in 100%. It's like, wait, there's a whole world outside of this and a life. And I think when you get too sucked in or wrapped up in it, you think that the business is what your worth is, and what you're proving to the world is this thing that you own. And I think that's very dangerous for a long period of time. I mean, Bruce, when you were on Printavo, like, nights and weekends, QuickBooks tickets, your middle name is Printavo on Facebook. We dealt with it. Yeah.
I think, you know what it was? I realized that for me, it wasn't that the business itself was the identity. For me, it was taking pride in being able to work so hard. That way it was like, I could outwork. It was like a sport almost, you know, I could outwork anybody. I'll wake up earlier. I'll stay up later. I'll do this. I'll fix that. I'll move faster. We'll build more features quicker. We'll, you know, be at every show. We'll do all this stuff. which like literally led me to, I had that pop up. I think I sent you of my, oh no, I didn't send you this yet. I found a photo of my calendar in 2021. And I was looking at it because I was trying to pull up some old contacts. And I was looking at it and I was just like, oh my gosh. Here, let me just show you guys this. See what you think. And I was just like, holy cow, this is crazy. So this is what my calendar looked like. And like, maybe Stephen, you have these types of weeks still sometimes, but like, you know, marketing meetings, so much hiring, interviews, more interviews, engineering meeting, podcasts, team, all hands, team thing, one-on-ones. I mean, Andy, did you ever have times like this? Like with like customer meetings or?
I mean, you know, in the startup phase, you're doing everything possible to succeed, you know, because it's stacked against you. Your most businesses fail in those first few years. And so I wasn't going to let that happen. And I think that one way I knew how to at least get there was through determination and the grind, like you said a minute ago. Like I had, you know, excess energy, I always have. And I just went all in. You know, it didn't matter if it was a Saturday or a Sunday or if it was 10 o'clock at night or 5 a.m. or whatever. You know, I was passionate and determined that this was going to succeed. And so I put in those extra hours. And I think what Stephen said is very true, that, you know, you become, that's your identity at first, because you're invested emotionally, you're invested financially. It's your reputation. You know, it's not just this, you're not just working there. Like, it's your reputation too. And so you're doing everything you can to succeed. But at some point, you know, that's not sustainable. And so I don't know, everyone has burnout at some point. Some, maybe it's 6 months, maybe it's 6 years. You don't know how long you can do that. I did that for quite a long time. And I think that a lot of business owners have that common thread. And I would call it fortitude, which isn't a very common word these days, but it's sort of like, and you're able to endure pain because there's pain and suffering with all of that, you know, and sacrifice and all that, but still show up, you know, and go, you know, go home, have a turkey sandwich, go to bed, wake up, do it again.
There's a term I heard recently, and it like resonated with me as like the tortured entrepreneur. To your point, Andy, we can endure our pain tolerance or suffering tolerance or time tolerance, or like, it's almost exasperating. I can't say that word.
Exasperating?
Yeah, I don't know either. What I was trying to say. And it's, is it because we're trying to prove something to ourselves? Like, I feel like entrepreneurs are slightly rebellious. Are we trying to prove something to someone? I've discovered that it's because I was youngest child in my family. And a lot of that complex kind of coming out of trying to prove something to someone. Like, I'm curious if there's any insight there on like, are you trying to prove this to yourself? Are you trying to prove this to the world? Are you trying to prove this to someone?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. Like when business owners do this to themselves, because it's not normal.
It's not normal, but I think it's, you know, I'm reading one of Ryan Holiday's books, and which is exciting because I'm going to meet him here in what, how many days? A few days.
3-4 days
in Salt Lake City.
That's right.
And he tells the story of Hercules, and he, you know, like he comes to this crossroads and he chooses, you know, he has a choice. He has this easy life, or, you know, this vice life that's just going to be all pleasure and no pain, or this other choice, which is virtuous and is going to be hard, but it's heroic. And it's something that, you know, it's a legacy. Actually, it's something that maybe is told for a story that's told forever. And he chose obviously the road less traveled. But why, you know, why would we choose that? Yeah. What is it about that? Yeah. I don't know. I haven't really, I need more therapy, I think, is what Stephen, you're saying, is that to figure that out. But I do know, like what I said at first, is that I wasn't going to fail. And if I did, then I succeeded in failing. And I would have learned from that and then done it again. You know what I mean? Because I would have just done it again. I don't know. And so I did everything I could to succeed. I don't know how we ended up. This is like way bigger, way off on this tangent of something, but I don't know. We're going to need a part three, I think.
Maybe this relates, maybe it doesn't, but what do you feel like is a failure or mistake that you ended up in that you would maybe tell yourself or guide yourself to change?
I think most of my mistakes and failures have this one thing in common. You have any guesses what that might be?
Missing the punchline in jokes.
I do that. I do mess that up.
Crushing your potato chips.
Which actually, Bruce, is...
Yeah. Can you imagine if Andy actually put it on his seat? Like, oh, shit. God, look what Trader Joe's did.
Bruce, you illustrated my point exactly. Because the common thing in my failures and mistakes is communication or miscommunication, lack thereof. And so my joke wasn't communicated very well, right? And so
example of that other than the joke?
Well, in my relationships and the shop, you know, it's hard because, you know, at first there's two or three people and then there's four or five and six and you're able to communicate pretty easily. And then all of a sudden there's 12 and then there's 24 and, you know, communication is incredibly hard. I mean, you remember when you were in school and you told the, you know, you whispered something in the ear and you went around a circle, it's completely different. And so, I miscommunicated so many times to, my team sometimes resulted in people quitting even, you know, and so, yeah.
What have you found that works well, like the better way to communicate than?
Man, I'm going back to Ryan Holiday and that's stoic. You know, try and it was hard for me because I was so invested, you know, emotionally and financially too. But just for me, the emotional part was like, you know, this is so important to me that I sometimes overreacted, you know, to stuff. And I went in hot, let's say, instead of mild, you know, and I needed to remain calm so that they heard my calmness. They heard what I was saying instead of hearing my anger or upset, you know what I'm saying? And they heard that first. And then all of a sudden they didn't even listen to the real thing that I had to say.
There's a really, 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 really good book. One of my favorite books is called Nonviolent Communication. I don't know if I've shared it with you guys before or not. I think a couple times maybe. But the point of it is to actually like foster empathy and understanding before you communicate. And so if you want to communicate effectively, you actually have to see the other person's perspective and make sure they feel understood. Because if they do not feel understood, whatever you're saying to them comes as criticism and a knock on like who they are. And so, you know, a great example of this is like a lot of times we complain about employees. This employee comes in late. This employee has a bad attitude. This employee, you know, you can make a laundry list of it. And you want to go to them and you want to write them up and you want to give them warnings. But what you should really think about is what's the result that I want? I want them to, you know, fix their errors or mistakes. But I really want them to understand where I'm coming from. And in order to do that, you actually have to spend time taking their side and saying like, okay, you're coming in late. I want to better understand that, you know, why is that happening? Well, I've got to drop off my kids or I have trouble. I don't get a lot of sleep at night. And what you're supposed to do is actually say it back to them and say like, okay, so you're telling me that you have trouble sleeping at night because your kids are up all night. And your commute is really long and sometimes you're just late to get out of the house. And what you'll ask them is, do you feel understood? Do you feel like I understand you? And they'll be like, yeah, that's exactly what's happening. And then what you do is you make your observations. Well, you know, we do have a company to run. We have expectations here. I want you to be successful here. What can we do together to fix that? And when you come at it from that nonviolent approach, it's less aggressive. And it doesn't feel like a fight or anything like that. It feels like you're solution oriented. So it's very, very, very hard to do as leaders because we get fired up and we immediately want to prove it wrong, right? Prove them wrong.
Is that the approach you take now, Andy? Like, instead, okay, you just talked about you missed, sounds like a bigger deadline. You haven't done that in a while. Angry Andy, old Andy would have, you know, gone in there, fired up. Sounds like V2 Andy is, what was the approach?
Well, it was in a text. And so, you know, you can't, a lot of times there's, it's, well, communication is very hard through texting because you don't know tone or anything like that. But I didn't say much, you know, it sounded, that's the production manager. He managed it and I didn't critique it. You know, it worked. He made it work and he said he was going to do better next time. And I think I hearted it. I can't remember what I said, but something positive, sort of in the line of, along the lines of what Stephen was referring to. Yeah.
It's interesting though, because there is a level of pressure that I do feel like needs to be applied to make sure that you're like, that you're taken seriously. It is easy to overtip that, like on one way or the other, right? So like, I don't know if the proper approach is the shit sandwich type thing, right? Where it's like, you know, look, like I appreciate you trying to get this done, but like we didn't get it done and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, layer it good in the end. Hope, like,
if you have to say but, then they just hear the but.
So no, don't say that.
You have to say and, right?
You know, I think that this happened once, you know, in the past couple of months. And so there's no, it's not like there's a pattern of a problem here. You know, if it were to all of a sudden start to turn into something like that, well, then that's the time for a conversation. But I mean, we all, you know, make mistakes and I don't think even it was a mistake. They just missed a deadline because of, you know, we were just super busy. And so trying to get everything done, sometimes it just doesn't happen. And I want to say that order, the shirts hit our floor at like 2:30. We were waiting on, you know, the order wasn't complete. All the shirts weren't here. UPS came, lunch happened or something. And then it got checked in, hit our floor and we missed it. I think that he would have stayed late or he would have gotten a team to stay late, get it done if the customer really, really needed it. But they made a call and the customer said, we can get it tomorrow. And so that was the decision that was made. But
how do you approach that? Like with attendance issues then? Cause like, maybe that's a, like Stephen, you talk about that and everybody deals with that. It could be getting stuff done on time, showing up on time. I've heard some shops are just like, it's almost like the rules now is that people can be within X amount of time late.
Attendance. I mean, so there is some flexibility. What Stephen, the story he told was I actually had someone that was very similar that was, it wasn't that they were late a lot. It's just they kind of predicted they were going to be. They were like, look, I have, now that it's, what is it? I think, you know, during the summer, their kids, it wasn't an issue, but being here by 8 o'clock, but during school, it's tough for them and it would be much better for them to be here at 8:30, right? And I think it even cost them extra if they were going to go do some sort of extended care early in the morning. It was going to cost them, you know, hundreds of dollars. And she came into me and she said, look, you know, is there any way that I could just start at 8:30 instead of 8 and I'll make up that half hour over lunch or, you know, whenever. And I said, of course, you know, she's a valued employee. She has, for whatever reason, this obstacle. And why should it be that it's like concrete, we're not going to budge on this sort of issue? I had, I guess, empathy towards the situation. And it actually works out really nicely because that staggered start works fine. I mean, we're not slammed at 8 in the morning. And so she can come in at 8:30. And then we have somebody to cover a lunch for a little bit extra. It actually is a win-win. You know, and so I think you need to listen sometimes to what your team or a certain employee. I mean, it doesn't always have to be, you know, super firm. Does that make sense? And are you guys flexible with that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think we have to be realistic that we're human and everyone's human, right? And some of us don't have the same circumstances as others. So like to lead with empathy. But I think it's also kind to be firm and direct. And so I think... sometimes leaders are afraid to reprimand or maybe write people up. But sometimes if you set clear expectations and you actually follow through with them, so like, hey, we have a 3-strike policy, that's actually kind. because you're not beating around the bush and you're just kind of sticking to it. And even if they're upset about it, they will get over it because you're honoring what you said you were going to do.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily you even, it's the rules, and it's the rules that they signed when they signed the employee handbook. And so if there isn't an issue with attendance, and let's say somebody's late and you've had the discussions, you've had the verbal warning, then what I do is I move to a written warning and a 30-day probation. And so we sit down in here and we talk about it and we say, you know, is it fair to say, I mean, look at your time card, you know, you're clocking in late, and that's now it's affecting your team and it's affecting the customers and everything. And, you know, it's just, we're going to have to, you either have to be here on time or it's going to result in termination. I mean, this is the rule, you know, this is when we start. And so you put them on 30-day probation, and then it's them, you know, and if they're late again, then it's just like they knew, and they knew the consequences. And so that's that. And I turn it into ADP, and ADP, I terminate, and ADP, supports the, the unemployment, if that's what happens.
And Andy, there was a very critical point in there, is like, I bring them into my office, I sit them down, we're at the same playing field, we're in a calm space, we're not doing it like we're trying to, you know, I think the set and the setting is also important, and not to do it when you're fired up, right? It's like, you're not like a police officer going out there and writing them a speeding ticket, as much as, you know, say they are late on Tuesday, give it the day, and then have a conversation with them Wednesday away from everyone, in private, and make sure you can carve out 30 minutes to do, you know, an impactful development meeting. I think that's something that we sometimes skirt around to try and solve the problem quicker. And you need to take your time with that to get the solution you want.
Andy, if you could speak to yourself on day one, I don't know what you were printing on, if you had a little Riley Hopkins, if you had a silver press or in the basement. But if you could speak to yourself on day one of starting Sure Kong, what would you say?
Bruce, great question. I made a video a while back, and I used three quotes. And this question sort of reminded me of those three quotes. And so here they go. The first one is, buy the ticket, take the ride. That's Hunter S. Thompson. Because... yeah, I mean, it's fun, you know, and what I said earlier is, even if it fails, you'll be a changed person. You'll have grown from it. You will know a lot, but it is a ride, and it's a wild one. The next one is, if you have everything under control, you're not going fast enough. That's Mario Andretti. And I had that quote in that video is because the reason why I did was because we were trying to set up a six-color job and print 100 shirts and do it as fast as we could. And we were going a little faster than what was safe. And I messed up and I hit a wrong button and it cost us some time. But, you know, if you're going too slow, well then, you know, maybe we would have even been slower. And so I really love that quote. And the last one is, above all, try something. And so just, I mean, do it, you know, do the thing, whatever that thing is that you want to do and you want to start. Well, then just do it and start it, and don't wait. Don't plan it too much. Don't try and be perfect. I started and I didn't even know how to get to process a credit card. You know what I mean? Like, how do you process credit cards? I don't know. And so we were taking...
Did they have credit cards back then? They did.
The Yellow Pages.
You put the card down and you made an imprint of it on a carbon copy.
I feel like some places still do that. Sometimes you go there like, oh shit, am I getting scammed?
Yeah. No, I didn't know how to do those sort of things, and who cares, you know? And so I was like, I'm sorry, I can't take a credit card. And now it's really easy. I get it. You get a Square or whatever, you know, it's just super simple. But back then you had to have really good credit and apply to be, because a lot of fraud takes place on the processor's side of things. You know, we have all these credit card numbers. We could charge them all. We can max them all out and go to Belize. I don't know where we could go, somewhere, Chili's. And those were the three quotes. And then in my own, I actually have this, and I say, prepare for the best of times and the worst of times. So take care of yourself, both physically and mentally. Go to the gym, lift a weight or weights, eat meat and vegetables, unless you're a vegetarian, just vegetables. Reduce added sugars, cut out soda, meditate, listen to music, spend time with people you love, and just breathe, because it's hard.
That's awesome. Bruce, what would you tell your younger self?
I would say focus earlier on being a calm company. I think that's the, yeah, calm, like a calm company. I think there was a fallacy of wanting to be the fast growing company, wanting to dominate everything, wanting to be number one. And I think it was still possible to get to that. I think it was still possible to be obsessive and be passionate about something, but also be more of a calm company in, you know, and that breaks down into profitability. Like, you don't have to reinvest constantly. Like, once you get to, you know, like a good, maybe like a 5-person team or something, like, we don't need to then take, oh, okay, we have additional profit now let's hire or buy this next thing. We could ride it out a bit longer and feel more calm about those decisions or the time spent. I mean, I showed you that calendar, like, that's the anti-calm. And you're right, like, maybe you have to do that to get things started and moving, but gosh, it doesn't need to go on for 8 years. That's not a calmer company. I mean, I do see some of these businesses that have been around for 20-30 years, and I can't imagine, maybe they are, but that it's not calmer than it was for those first few years. Like, I do think it makes me really wonder, is it possible to build a business that's more in a calm mindset than a hair on fire mindset all the time, right? Things are like kind of swaying up and down at times, but does it have to be on fire all the time? I challenge that a little bit.
What I've learned is there's moments to sprint, there's moments to run, there's moments to walk, and there's moments to sit down.
That's a great way of explaining it.
And I think in our business, I almost plan it for different seasons. Like, okay, I'm going into March, it's March Madness. I'm preparing myself to be in a sprint for 3 weeks. It's going to be a sprint. And I just like mentally kind of just like get there, you know, and you get energized by it, right? Like, the kitchen is hot, I'm going to embrace it. But then it's important to be able to say like, okay, I'm going to walk for a little bit, and that's okay too. And so I think you can't sprint all the time. That's insane. But you have to be able to balance those things out and be aware that, okay, now is time to chill a little bit, and that's okay. And I think in our industry, it lends itself to, with the ups and downs and swings of just the industry. But I feel like in moments of rest, sometimes shop owners are like, okay, now I have to scramble because I need to get ready and do all these things. And maybe you just need to rest.
I think that, you know, a boxer is in a fight, and then they have the bell rings, and they sit down for a minute and they rest, and then they come back and fight again. And I think that's really important to rest. And I would modify Hunter S. Thompson's quote to Bruce's quote now. And I would call it, buy the ticket, take the ride, and enjoy it. You know, because I think sometimes we're in a rush, you know, to get to the finish line. And the ride is what's the best part. You know, like, it's so fun to start with from nothing and then build it. And it's hard to replicate that ever again, you know? And so how, you know, here I am, year 16 in this shop, and is it the best? I mean, you know, it's profitable, and it's, and things are in place, and it all works out nicely, and there's still problems, but I would say the best part were the earlier years. You know, I felt alive, super alive. And because it was, I felt all of the emotions. And so, yeah, enjoy the ride maybe, and try and be a little calmer. I like that.
I have a little bit of I think an enhanced definition. This is from 37 Signals, who's a software company out of Chicago, and they define calm company in a few aspects. So the first one is work-life balance. They feel like any more than roughly eight-hour days, 40 hours a week or so, and the quality of work just starts to fall off a cliff. You know, I'm sure we've all felt that, where it's like, you know, maybe you're fired up in the morning. Those first 4 hours are so productive. And then maybe after dinner or something like that, you may have to get something done, but it takes 50% more time to actually do it. You lose a lot of focus, whatever it is. They try to reduce asynchronous communication. So they really try to write things longer form. Like if there's a meeting, things are more documented going into it. They're bigger on also how do we make a lasting time working on this business, as in how do we avoid the burnout like we talked about earlier? Can you do things that will allow you to be able to work on this a lot longer? You know, maybe that's the hiring the right person to take a huge chunk off your plate. Maybe it's taking a longer vacation. I know we are like, I think we're warriors or something, and try to take the least amount of time off and continue working when we are off. And then simple solutions. So, you know, can you simply solve different problems instead of add complex processes all the time? So that's their definition.
I read something, I don't know if I sent this to you, Andy, on Instagram, but it says in business or in life or whatever, there are two people you need to try to impress or make proud. The 8-year-old you and the 80-year-old you. And if you can do that every single day and say, what would my inner child think if I was talking to this 8-year-old Steven? And when I'm 80 years old, what would I look back and think and say on what I'm doing right now? And it's like, you know, finding that child, finding that grandparent, and that's like an older, wiser self or a young, innocent self. And if you ask yourself those questions, you will make better choices to live super presently and to work super presently, I believe.
I like that. I'll try.
That's super cool. I've got a couple more questions, but I know this is the cutoff here, Andy. So
we can go. Can we give it a? Should we give it a 10 minute? Should we go for 10?
What do you feel like in your work life that you're tolerating but shouldn't be?
Oh, Steven goes first. Let me think about that.
I don't know. What am I tolerating but shouldn't be? I'm struggling with this one.
I feel like I have things I could say and things I can't say, but...
What do you not want to say?
I mean, I think throughout the journey... Okay, I'm going to go back. So like pre sort of like ownership change and stuff. I would say number one, there's always maybe, I don't know, call it 10% of team members that just need to be like, look, you got to step up to the plate or this is not the right fit. I mean, like, I don't know what else to do. Like the bars here, I'm rowing the boat with my back into it, with my arms and everything. And you're kind of like sitting on the front of the boat and maybe even rowing backwards sometimes. And so like, I need to make that decision or you need to be able to get on with me and we move on. So I think that's one. I think the other one is, I think there's a lot sooner point in the business, and we touched on this, so I don't want to drag it on, but there's a lot sooner point in the business where I should have transferred that calendar that I showed you. And for people on audio, it's just all blue on the Google calendar of like calls and meetings and this and that and flights and whatever. And I could have transitioned that sooner. Like if the goal was to run this as long as possible in a profitable way as possible and allowing me to choose the time that I want to spend, I could have transition that to a more calm company years before I thought it was possible and before I got to that burnout stage. So I could have doubled my lifespan with it. Those are the top two.
That I'm constantly bombarded by digitizers. I tolerate that probably too much. I should do something about it, take a stand. And now they're clever and it's like, you know, it'll be like, hey, this is Kevin. You know, what's up? You know, and like in the Instagram, you know, message or something. And you're like, Kevin, I might know Kevin. And there's like a normal picture. And then you go to their profile and it's a digitizer. I think that probably just leads me to just too many emails that don't matter because it's just a waste of time, you know? And so I spend time deleting or whatever it is. And so I try to unsubscribe whenever possible. Sometimes it's harder than others, you know, to unsubscribe. If you ever noticed, it takes you to a website and then, hey, what are your email preferences? And then you have to fill out a survey and all this stuff. But my inbox is still too full. I don't know how to filter it so that it's only the real important stuff. And I tolerate too many emails.
I tolerate being way too available at the expense of my time. And so it's like, I have the fastest response time on email and Slack to anyone, whether it's customer, outbound, you name it. And I put myself through that sometimes for no good reason. Kind of, Bruce, to your calendar point, it's like, they can wait. You don't have to be a superhero or that Hercules all the time. And that's something that I, yeah, presently definitely like check my email so many times a day. And I, for some reason, try to be so fast at responding to people. And it takes away from the things I want to do.
I respect that though. I mean, I do, I respond quickly also. I mean, it's, you know, if somebody needs an answer here, I want to get that answer for them, you know, so that they can move on to the next issue. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm the same way, Steve. I'm guilty of that too.
Part three.
Bruce, it's your birthday.
Whose?
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, I didn't know this.
24 looks so good on you.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Appreciate it.
Should we sing?
No, but we can pick on Bruce. Should we pick on Bruce? I will tell you what we're proud of, Bruce. Bruce competed in his first surf competition. Did you know that, Andy?
I didn't. How'd it go?
It was good. Got fourth, which is cool. I'm nine, so it was exciting. But yeah, I want to get top three, so I'm going back in with the coach to try to get there again. But it was cool. It was an accomplishment.
That was your Misogi or a goal you set like a long time ago?
I set it for last year, actually, as like the big goal for last year, and did not feel ready. So this one popped up this year and I'm signing up. And when you sign up, it's kind of interesting, right? Like when you put something on the calendar, a deposit, whatever it is, it's like your brain starts to work in a totally different way of, okay, what are the actual steps I need to do to be able to get here now? Now that it's like being held accountable to it.
Unless you procrastinate, you know, because I saw this funny graduation speech or a song actually, and he started playing the piano and singing. He said, you know, the administration asked me to come up with a song last year for this speech, and I started writing it yesterday, you know, and so it's like, when do you could put it off, but Bruce, you don't seem like the type of person. I think a lot of shop owners don't do a whole lot of that.
I've heard the, yeah, book the theater, write the play, sign up for it, and you're going to figure it out.
Dude, totally. It's kind of a game changer in a way. That and having a coach to help you do so. I know we were like, this is not a fabric pitch, but like for any activity or something that you want to get good at, it's incredible to have a coach. Okay, I actually getting texted by my wife that I have to jump. She's got some birthday surprise thing. But Andy, thank you so much for coming on a little bit early too today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun. I put this on my calendar and I had to actually do it, right? And so I just demonstrated your point there. Yeah.
I've got part three. So if you're into it, I've got some more Ooh, questions.
Maybe after we hear from Ryan Holiday.
Ooh, done. Oh, I answered for Andy.
Talk to y'all soon.
Sure thing.
Bye, guys. See you guys. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.